This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Still no resolution to the budget standoff in the North Carolina state legislature. State lawmakers met Tuesday for one-day session. Senate Republicans couldn't get enough votes to override Governor Cooper's veto of a teacher pay raise. They went home, and they won't be back till April. Joining me now is WUNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff DeBerry. Jeff, welcome back.
Hey there, Frank.
So technically, there's no real, we don't have a new budget for this fiscal year.
Don't have a new budget, haven't had one for 7 months. Fiscal year starts July 1st, and it was in very late June that the governor vetoed that big spending plan. So as a reminder, what happened was not a government shutdown, which we have seen at the federal level. Republicans prepared for that moment last summer. They had passed a state law in previous years that rolled the previous spending measures forward. So spending moved forward, and for the most part, a lot of people have gone about their lives. There have been some people who have been impacted, but ultimately the crux of this here is governor vetoed it. They no longer have Republican veto proof or supermajorities, and there you can point fingers all day long. There has been an unwillingness or an inability from both the Democratic governor and Republican lawmakers to compromise and work something out.
All right. And recap this. We've talked about it before, but recap the veto over teacher pay raises. A Democratic governor vetoing a pay raise for a teacher. What's going on?
That's right. And the numbers here in the budget, it was roughly a 4% raise over 2 years for educators across the state. The governor, in his largely ceremonial symbolic budget proposal that had come out earlier in 2019, had called for in the neighborhood of a 9% raise over 2 years for teachers. He vetoed this, calling it paltry. So we hit the budget impasse. There was this stalemate. Later in the summer, early fall, there was another effort to give teachers a raise from Republican lawmakers. They said this was, you know, this was another effort to try to boost the pay of educators across the state. Cooper vetoed that as well, again, saying that it was paltry. So now we have something of a messaging battle where Republicans are saying the governor keeps vetoing these efforts to give teachers more money. And the governor is saying, listen, this is not nearly enough. So That's to some extent where they are.
That's where they are, and they won't be back until, what, April 28th?
You said it. 3.5 months. Longest break in 4 years. And I think that it's necessary as they haven't really accomplished a whole bunch. When you don't have the veto-proof margins, you are not able, as from the Republican standpoint, to do whatever you want. And if there has been this inability to negotiate on certain things, you're just not going to get things done. So as we step away for 3.5 months, we'll have a primary, a very important primary here in North Carolina, and they will come back in late April for what is traditionally known as the short session. And typically, the big thing they do in an even-numbered year is they make adjustments to the big budget that's passed in the odd-numbered year. So if you have a billion-dollar surplus or a billion-dollar shortfall, you have to deal with that. Or if there's some other appropriation that is needed across the state, you deal with that. However, they didn't pass a big budget. So can you come back and fix something if it doesn't exist? The governor right now seems to think, yes, you can. And Republican Senate Leader Phil Berger seems to have indicated there's not going to be much for us to do if we don't pass a budget.
Well, can they in that interim year, of course, ordinarily it's a two-year budget, and that's the point.
Correct.
You want to not let that thing roll for 2 years in case you need to make adjustments. So you come back mid-year, mid-term, let's say, over that two-year term.
Sure.
Can you, in that interim term, pass the budget and have it a one-year budget? Or just,
they make the rules. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah. And they do.
Sure.
Well, let's talk about a little bit of what else they're facing, because when they come back, they are going to be ever closer to a critical 2020 election, right?
That's right. And perhaps it's the cynic in me, perhaps it's the experience I have being in that building, but I think as you inch closer to an election, we've already seen the heels dug pretty deeply into whatever surface they're standing on. So as we inch from years to months to weeks until an election, do we really think that they're going to come together and coalesce around some agreement on teacher pay or on Medicaid expansion or on some big ticket item? Or do we think that they're ultimately going to keep fighting and take this issue to the voters come November 3rd? I think it's the latter.
All right. What has been accomplished? Talk about it. I mean, obviously they were because interestingly enough, you talk about this being one of the longest breaks in their history, this between now and April 28th. On the other hand, it's the second longest session. They've been talking to each other longer than usual.
part of the reason that they were in for so long in 2019 was because of redistricting, right? So we had court ordered, then kind of court encouraged redistricting for both state legislative boundaries as well as congressional boundaries districts. And we're going to have new maps in North Carolina in 2020, which is it gets buried with everything else that's going on. But I think that is an important note. So those were a couple of things they had to do. This past week, we should note that they also fixed an issue that was born out of the budget impasse, and that was dealing with appropriating some funds that were needed for a scholarship program for children of veterans who have been killed in action or who have been left disabled. Children at community college and university systems across the state. From my read on this and the conversations I've had, ultimately boils down to a true failure of bureaucracy to not have fixed this earlier, but they did fix it, and it was a unanimous vote.
All right, so they got that through, a scholarship for combat veterans. Now let's talk more about some of these voting, because of the disputes over voting rights, the courts have flagged this legislature a number of times for racial discrimination when it comes to voting. And as we head to Super Tuesday, followed by the general election, obviously, in November, what's going on with voter ID? What do we need to know?
Well, and to be fair, not just this legislature. I mean, voting discrimination has gone back decades, unfortunately, in this state. Lawmakers, voter ID has been blocked for the time being by a federal judge who used the word discriminatory or discriminates 87 times in a 50-page ruling. Ultimately, this is going to be adjudicated by the federal bench. It has been appealed to the effort to the ruling that blocked voter ID, photo identification of the polls. That ruling has now been appealed to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is in Richmond, Virginia. Barring some huge surprise, photo ID will not be required to vote on March 3rd. It is possible that it is required come November. We just don't know at this point.
One of the things, it is interesting because we know now that the at the national level, the congressional districts have been redrawn or are going to be redrawn. So we're going to be looking at a whole new landscape when it comes to our congressional representation in Washington. What has redistricting meant in political terms? Has anybody been able to figure that out at the legislative level?
It's a good question, and you know, I operate in a world of a blender. I'm constantly being spun. I talked to some Democrats who Democrats believe they can win a majority in the North Carolina House. I talked to one Senate Democrat who said candidly to me he doesn't know if they can get to 26 seats, which is what you need for the majority. He says he believes they can get to 25, and that would make the lieutenant governor suddenly very important. If there, in fact, is a tie in the Senate, lieutenant governor would break ties. On the other side, I've talked to some Republicans who said they feel that this is going to move, that the House right now is 65 to 55 of the 120 members. And I've talked to a couple of Republican strategists who feel that this map, they think, will help them keep 61 or 62 seats. It's going to narrow it, but they think it's to their advantage on the House side. So we have not seen, we don't know. We're very, those of us who live in the bubble are very interested to see how the new districts shake out.
Races that are not affected by redistricting are Senate races. They are statewide votes, and there is a Senate race, a very important one in this state, very important nationally. Tom Tillis running for re-election for a while looked like he was on the ropes, and the fact is now he's with the Senate vote coming up, it's very important to think about the role of both Richard Burr and Tom Tillis, perhaps more significantly Tom Tillis because he's running for re-election.
That's right. Richard Burr has indicated that come the end of next year, 2021, he will retire, will not run for re-election in 2022. And Tillis is seeking another six-year term. This is a seat that has upended incumbents the last two times that they've been on the ballot. So Tillis is trying to avoid that. He very much has attached his candidacy, his efforts, his messaging to the framework of the president. He wants to be seen as loyal to the president. He is very quick to point out that the president has endorsed him. So I would be very surprised if we see any change of course there.
All right. And that would probably mean in terms of the Senate trial, while all the evidence hasn't been presented yet, Tom Tillis seems to be pretty clear about how he's going to come out.
He is a Trump loyalist. Yeah. He is very loyal to the president. It would take a box of smoking guns, maybe, for Tillis to change course on this. Burr has not been as outspoken of a supporter of the president. He's the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and he has run what has been an investigation into election meddling from 2016. And he's received respect. We've heard from both sides that he's done a good job doing that. So if one of them were to move, I would think that it would be Burr on this issue, but I'd be a little bit surprised if either of them did.
All right, let's talk about the Equal Rights Amendment now getting some attention. The state of Virginia has passed the Equal Rights Amendment. Of course, significantly, that legislature has flipped in the last election. It is now controlled by Democrats and with a Democratic governor for the first time in a long time. What's the likelihood that the ERA could see the light of day in North Carolina?
In 2020, that's a pretty slim likelihood. Come 2021, if Democrats were to take back one of the chambers or both of the chambers, if they took back both of the chambers, I think it would be a foregone conclusion. It would move quickly. I think an interesting dynamic would be if Democrats took back one chamber of the North Carolina legislature come 2021, because the question then becomes, what can they hold the line on? What can they ultimately say, you're not going to get this until we get what we want over here?
You know, it's interesting because even if it's close, and even if the House and Senate were divided along party lines, if that 2020 vote turns out, let's say, a lot of women turn out, and that becomes the story of the 2020 national election, it means that neither party can afford to ignore it. So getting out the vote is going to be critical in 2020 every way you look at it.
Plausible, very important. Elections matter. The ERA effort in Virginia failed a year ago by a vote. They had elections in November. Democrats picked up seats. And of course, this week it moved through 38th state, I believe, to ratify.
Jeff DeBerry, WNC Capital Bureau Chief. As always, Jeff, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.